This is WABF. It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign, an adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, welcome back to Monday on the show. I'm a little tired tonight. Like I was telling you, we had a wonderful education conference from 1 o'clock to 5 o'clock yesterday afternoon in Enterprise. And I didn't get home until 9:30. And, you know, it's one of these things, as we get a little bit older, things kind of slow down. Not for me. Yeah, I wish I could say that's true. I'm just kind of zombied out today. But
who is we in the educational conference? What was that?
Well, basically, what we had was several different people who I'll read out some of it. But what we're trying to do is identify issues that parents need to know about that they may not understand or see what's happening. And so I'm going to use two examples this morning. One of them is what our South Baldwin chapter under Robert Monk and his team found out about Studies Weekly. Okay, Studies Weekly is a K-6 publication that's used in the schools. Okay, in the schools, and no one really knows what they say. What is the content? And that's one of the things that our team down there spent a whole year analyzing. And they've come up with a tremendous amount of information. And they've actually talked to Studies Weekly. And I'll talk a little bit more about this in a second.
Okay.
So that's one example. Another example is, what are the counselors doing? There's a counseling program that was implemented in 2012. And it's all about left-wing ideology being implemented through the counselors. I know. Now, you see, now Laurie is raising her eyebrows and saying, oh, God, this is real conspiracy. But the problem is, it's not conspiracy. It's all documented. It's all there. And what Colonel Mike Parsons has been able to find out in detail is what they're doing. So I want to cover some of that. So the big picture with this, though, Laurie, is that we have got to figure out what we're doing with education. Okay, we know we're 52nd in math in the national assessments, and we're 48th in English. But it's not just about the scores. And I'll come back to that theme in a second.
Okay.
So now that you've got me off track here, thank you, Laurie.
You're welcome.
So what else are we going to do today, guys and gals out there in listening land? Here's what I'd like to do, okay, if we have time. And here, isn't it funny? I've got a whole hour. And I'm thinking to myself, I probably could use an hour and a half today.
Oh, right? You'll make
but
it.
But I'll do my best to make Laurie happy, and I'll cut it off at an hour. All right, so we're going to talk about the education conference. I want to talk a little bit about the Florida hurricane and how DeSantis has helped it, because it has severe political implications, okay? I also want to talk about Putin and Ukraine and issues about what's happening there. I mean, evidently the Ukrainian terrorists blew up a Crimean bridge. Good for them. But that has implications for us, too. And then, of course, Biden's talking about nuclear Armageddon. Hey, guys, I mean, I just spoke about this last Monday, if you recall. Okay? So I want to follow up on some of those ideas about that. Needless to say, the border is still an issue. And New York mayor is now calling for, you know, a crisis in New York. Now, it's really interesting how that Biden and them have been flying planes into New York forever, but that didn't matter. But once Abbott and them started busing folks up there, about 6,000 of them, oh my God, now they've got Hoovervilles. They can't deal with it. Good for Abbott, and too bad for Adam. We'll talk a little bit about that, okay? I do want to talk about the Hunter Biden business. You know, it's amazing. I mean, in 2020, October of, all the smart people were saying, oh, God, it's Russian disinformation that's on the laptop. I mean, 50-some-odd CIA, FBI, all the elites were all saying this is disinformation. It should be just shoved away. And so the FBI killed it. Now, of course, everyone knows it's all true. So let's see what's going on with that. I definitely want to talk about Biden and this whole idea of Armageddon. We need to really think about this, but we also need to kind of think about what the Ruskies have done. Not the Ruskies per se, but pro-Russian hackers have already, I guess during the week, shut down O'Hare Airport in Chicago, and they plan on doing a few other things. So, all in all, I've got a full hour here, Lori. I just may have to buy into... Yeah,
buy more
2 hours. Yeah,
all
buy more.
Want.
Go for it. All right. All right, so let me get into the education. And I think that one of the things that I want to just kind of, you know, help everyone understand is that we didn't just have a bunch of yahoos up there yelling and screaming about, you know, how bad education is and blah, blah, blah. No. We had professional folks talking about issues. And here's a good example, okay? This is Mrs. Julia Gibbs. She has her own licensed business for counseling in Spanish Fort. And she's talking about transgenderism in Alabama schools, okay? Her uncle, Dr. Hayden Childs from Sampson, basically was talking about the science behind why schools should not be pushing vaccinating and masking children. Now, you all know all the hoorah we had down here last year when the school system wanted to go back to masking. And I know Common Sense Campaign supported the health freedom, Stephanie Dernan, in flying planes over, you know, the football games with banners, no masking. Funny how a couple of days later the masking went away. Okay, we had Miss Chastity White, a longtime supporter of fighting Common Core. I've known Chastity for 10 years, 13-year teacher, and then she moved up to work with Michael Sentence, and then she has been the NAEP coordinator for Alabama. She's now teaching back in Tuscaloosa, 7th grade civics. She was to talk about the whole issue of fighting action civics, because she's a civics teacher. Mrs. Gibbs came back on and talked about countering the rising tide of new sex education. Remember, I think I mentioned it last week, that Secretary Mackey had been involved with the sex education group that was actually putting out this pornography into the schools. And of course, Mackey, once he got caught, you know, basically says, oh, I didn't know anything about it. Well, maybe he didn't know anything about it. Okay, I'll give him that. But what I don't give him is the fact that he didn't forcefully say, and this is not coming to Alabama. Oh, no, we can't say anything like that. Huh, heaven forbid. Well, I'll tell you something. We're going to follow up on it, and we're going to get him to say it's not coming to Alabama, along with some of these other things that are so important for you to know about. Okay? So this next one is really one that I think I really was enjoyed a lot, because Dr. Barry Nolan, who works with Robert Monk in our South Baldwin chapter to produce the information that we have about Studies Weekly. Well, Dr. Nolan gave his, and I love the title here, Why Johnny and Sally in K-6 Don't Know History, the Case of Studies Weekly as a Primary Cause. Well, there it is. They were able to do a content analysis, which is an academic approach to dealing with various, you know, issues. And they have done a great job with this. And they've worked with Studies Weekly to try to get them to correct some of the biases and the wrong interpretations of history that they're putting out. Our last speaker was Mrs. Elise Wood, whose husband is a pastor in Newton, Alabama. He's also a former airborne paratrooper, really great guy, and I've known him for several years, working with him on getting rid of Common Core. So at any rate, Miss Wood is a retired Christian counselor, and she spoke on the educational model of political thought reform, you know, hurting mental health of children. What that really means is that they're indoctrinating these kids on all of these things like transgenderism, creating this dysphoria, and it does have a negative effect on mental health, okay? Our last presenter was Colonel Mike Parsons, who I mentioned earlier. Mike has been doing a lot of work on this since 2010. We've all been working together on defeating Common Core or repealing it. And he also, in the course of what he was doing, he discovered that in 2012, the state board, the state superintendent, went ahead and adopted what essentially is an indoctrination program, and I'll get more into that in just a bit. So, Lori, that's what we're going to do this morning. It only took me, 5 minutes to get through the show, so...
Plenty of time.
But you know what, folks? You know, the good thing about having a little bit more time is that we're able to dig into these things a little bit deeper. And I think that one of the things with the education issue, it requires going in a little bit deeper. And the reason I say that is because, in the end, the scores are the scores, okay? And I understand that. The accountability aspect of how we deal with, you know, spending billions upon billions of dollars in Alabama education really turns on, well, what does the product look like? Well, how do you tell what the product looks like? And basically, it's going to be scoring. And here again, I'm not a score guy, but on the other hand, there has to be a balance here, okay? And so as we look at scores, that's one of the things that's the easiest place for us to be able to say to these boards of education, read that the state or the local number. Here's the scores, folks. Why are we at the place we are in? Okay? Pretty easy question, okay? But having said that, now we get into issues about, well, what are the students really learning? Okay? And if you remember, during the pandemic, lots of parents started to see what they were being taught, and they didn't like it. And part of what happened in Virginia was a revolution. Okay? Got rid of the Democrat governor, got a new lieutenant governor who was a Republican, and they're cleaning house. Okay? And I think I mentioned last week that, you know, the governor up there, whose name escapes me right now, but nevertheless, see, I'm getting old, okay? I can't remember his name, the governor of Virginia. At any rate,
I don't.
So what happens? He promulgates this new approach to pronouns, okay? There are not going to be any programs, whatever. It's just traditional pronouns. And so the students, acting out under, you know, Action Civics, protested. They left the schools. They were protesting the new policy. All right. So in the end, what did the governor say? Hey, we're sticking with it. Okay? And this is the governor's leadership. It's just sort of like DeSantis in the Florida, this whole business of how well DeSantis has done in handling the hurricane. I mean, leadership matters.
Glenn Youngkin.
Thank you very much. Okay.
Thanks to
Google.
And
I'll have to take some sort of a medication to start learning, get my memory back. All right. So, but my point here is, scores are easy. Content is much more difficult. Okay. So that's one of the issues that I want to talk about. But so let's kind of frame this along the lines of, we all know that we're, you know, Alabama's 52nd in math and 48th in ELA, all right? Let's take that down to Baldwin County. And this is something that I've been talking to the Baldwin County Board of Education for over a year now, okay? One of the things that I gave them was a brief analysis of Baldwin County, a 2016 to 2021 snapshot of math only, okay? So here in the 2016 test scores, the Alabama, they were using an Aspire test. It doesn't matter what test they're using. A test is a test, okay? So Baldwin County High School had 10% math proficiency in 2016. Robertsdale had 15%. Foley High School had 20%, okay? So, I mean, you kind of say to yourself, gee, not too good. No kidding, all right? Not too good. All right, so run the reel up to 2021. which at this point is the latest ACAP, which is the Alabama Comprehensive Assessment, okay? The last time that we had scores for each of the schools was then. We're waiting for the 2022 assessments to get here, okay? The Baldwin County assessment has been made, and we know that essentially we did do a little bit better in English. It went We did better in math. We were at 32, and now they're at 39. We went down a little bit in ELA from 57 to 56. All right, so that's where we are, Baldwin County, overall. But back to my point, when I gave this snapshot of, you know, a review of what the math was looking like in 2016, as I said, dismal, 10%, 15%, 20% for those schools. So respectively, though, by 2021, I can report that they did improve. It went from Baldwin County from 10 to 19%. Foley went from 15 to 24%. Robertsdale went from 20% to a whopping 34%. So you're saying to yourself, yeah, they did go up, but is that sufficient for you? I mean, what is sufficient in terms of math proficiency? Is it 70%? A C? How about an 80% B? How about a 90% A minus? I don't know. I'm not going to sit here and say it needs to be X, Y, Z. All I know is what those stats that I just gave you, they are Baltimore level. And to illustrate that even more, last year there were seven schools that were in the teens, and I've said this to you all before. Seven schools in the teens in Baldwin County. Okay? So, I mean, do we have an education problem? You betcha boompy we do. It's that simple. Okay? So let's look at that as one aspect of this educational problem we have to deal with. Figure out what we need to do to raise these scores. That's the accountability issue. Now, I've made this case to the Board of Education here and to other places that the only variable that makes any sense in terms of understanding why these scores are so low is, bingo, you guessed it, what am I going to say? Are you thinking it out there? What are you thinking, Lori?
The federal government?
No.
The county school system?
No.
The liberals?
You're getting warmer. It's Common Core.
Ah.
Okay, and yes, technically that's federal. Okay, I get that. But it's Common Core. That's the only explanation. It's not money. We've got more money than we've ever had. And this school budget here, now, it was $490 million. It's now $518, over half a billion dollars. Okay, so don't talk about money being a problem. Now, there are issues about how they use it. I get that. And we'll come to that. So on the one hand, the scoring question is relatively easy to deal with, okay? But so what are they learning? What's going on inside the classroom? Well, this is where our South Baldwin chapter under Robert Monk spent a whole year going into in depth what Studies Weekly said about various issues, okay? So you ask yourself, well, who is Studies Weekly? Okay, I think when we were in school, Laurie, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't we have the Weekly Reader or something like that?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah, okay. But that was just a supplement to everything else that was going. That wasn't a substitute for the textbooks or anything like that. That was just sort of an addition, all right? But Studies Weekly ain't no... it is not any supplement. It is the only thing they are using. And you're saying, Dr. Liu, how can you say that? Pretty simple, because that's exactly what we found. In K through 6, Studies Weekly is what they are using for their social studies information. So what is it? Well, Studies Weekly is nothing more than a business, okay? And here's how it works, okay? In the end, it's a Utah-based curriculum company founded in 1984. They make about, they had a $61 million profit last year. There are more than 13,000 schools, and I'm reading this off of the handout that we gave everybody yesterday, okay? 13,000 schools across the country with about 4.3 million students that use this. According to the company's website, Eight states have adopted its materials, including Alabama, California, Florida, Indiana, blah, blah, blah. That doesn't matter. What matters is Alabama has adopted it. Now, here's what's interesting. In the course of their research, our team found out that the Alabama School Board has not really approved what this is doing, okay, what they're saying, and in their weekly reports. That and the basic argument here is that Studies Weekly produced its changes, and the State Board of Education did not go through a certification on, and they won't go through a certification until this next coming year. So whatever these guys are putting out to your K through 6 students have not been certified by the Board of Education. Okay, now you say, oh my God. Well, let me just say this. This is the same school board that certified Common Core math for you in 2010, which the governor told you we had eradicated Common Core math. BS, okay? So if you trust these people to look at this stuff, and wait until you hear what they say about critical race theory, which is my next point here. If you think that the State Board of Education is going to do anything to rein in the kind of liberal crap that's going on in here, forget it, okay? We'll try to put pressure on them and do all of those kinds of things, but guess what? Whoever they put on their little committees to make sure that whatever little Johnny and Sally are being taught is okay by us, they are not going to touch anything that even, you know, suggests that there's a conservative interpretation that they need to include in their review of what's going on. You can book that one, okay? So now that you know a little bit about who Studies Weekly is, let me just give you one example of the content analysis that was done, okay? And let me preface this by saying one thing, okay? Because of complaints that were made prior to when our group did it, okay? Studies Weekly has this point that Dr. Nolan made at our meeting yesterday. In 2019, an internal review of Studies Weekly widely used materials found more than 400 examples of racial or ethnic bias, historical inaccuracies, age inappropriate content, and other errors in the materials, according to internal documents that were presented to the company's executive board. The source for that was Education Week, which is certainly no friend to the conservatives, but nevertheless, they did some homework on that. So why is that important? Because in the end, you know, it means that there already was bias and error in the content of what they were putting out to the children, okay? So given that, when our South Baldwin team started to get into this, it was clear that they were expecting bias. And guess what? They found it, okay? So here is one example, okay? This is this whole question about critical race theory. Now, remember, we've gone through this before, and as it turns out, the CRT, as they call it, has been, you know, banned from Alabama schools. Now, whether or not that's enforced, that's another story. So I'm not going to worry about that one right now. But technically, it's banned, okay? So what did our group find out about CRT, okay? Essentially, they basically assume systemic racism exists. They also assume racism is prevalent in the United States. They also believe that any number of minority group qualifies that member to speak out as an authority on racism. So, you know, that's an element of relativism here that makes it difficult to really kind of get a comprehensive view of what's really happening, okay? It also believes, too, that an authority on CRT will provide its expertise to schools, okay? So what you have here is a situation that argues about systemic racism. And the point that I've tried to make on this radio show before is that if you really analyze the question of systemic racism, it really becomes difficult to assume that it really is there, okay? It doesn't mean that racism doesn't exist in one form or another. I get that. But systemic racism is a horse of a different matter, okay? And here we get back to the King Revolution in political and social, you know, issues. And I've suggested to you before, how can you have systemic racism when you've got black mayors in charge of most of the big cities in this country? Doesn't matter that they're failing as mayors, you know, crime and all the rest of that stuff. Doesn't matter. They're in charge. How does systemic racism exist when you've got sheriffs who are in charge in various counties in the country who are minorities? How does systemic racism really, you know, how do you buy into that when you look at the black caucus in Congress? So if systemic racism is to be believed, then what you're seeing and all those elements that I just pointed out to you, what? Am I lying? Tell me. Is it a lie to say that minorities in charge of all the big cities in this country? I don't think so. So once again, we get back to the fundamental issue of why CRT? And that is simple. This is Black Lives Matter, Antifa, and other people who want to divide the country along race lines, and they're able to stir the pot. And every time there's something on CNN or MSNBC that shows some bad thing happening to a minority, well, then they're going to focus on that. So whether it was George Floyd or whoever, notice what happened after George Floyd. Defund the police. That's, and I mean, if you think that that's kind of Looney Tunes, no kidding. Did that stop them from doing it? Promulgating it? Arguing for it? Actually doing it in some of these Democrat-controlled cities like Portland? You know as well as I do. Nothing stopped them from doing it. Well, now they're all running away from it because, oh my God, crime has spiked. You know, it's nuts. And they're trying to preserve their power by, you know, basically saying, well, we never said that. But then one of them came on TV the other day, I think Bush from Missouri, I'm not sure exactly, maybe St. Louis, and she's talking about her defense of defunding the police. Okay? And so despite the fact that the Democrat leadership is moving away from that, she's out there beating the drums for it. Let them beat the drums for it. It just helps us a lot as far as what's going on. So my point here, and I've spent, well, this is, I've just spent half the show on this, okay? Lori's rolling her eyes. No, I'm going to get through everything else. But my point here is, folks, is that there's two ways to look at this crisis of education. On the scoring card and on the content card. I would argue that we're failing in both, and what we need to do is come up with a game plan to move forward to address these problems. So I'm going to talk more about this in our next show after we have a chance to digest some of the things that we've seen, talk to some other folks about this. But I do think that there is a grain of hope here in Baldwin County, because Jackie Ziegler and I met with Dr. Renee Carter, who is the academic head of Baldwin County Schools. And I think that she's willing to work with us to improve math, as I think I've mentioned this to you all before. And I've talked to her about having Colonel Parsons do a Zoom with us so that she can fully understand the insidious nature of what the counseling program is all about. And we'll go from there. And I think what we'll end up seeing, if we do this in maybe three or four of the major school systems, get those school systems to believe what we're saying, that we may be able to force the State Board of Education to do something about it. I know Colonel Parsons already has a bill that he's redrafted and sent to the legislature. We'll see where that goes. But every year that bill gets killed, along with our bills to get rid of Common Core. So let's just play it by ear. We'll see what happens. But I do think it's worth our efforts. And what South Baldwin chapter did is an example of what can be done. But unless we see the changes that are necessary, then all of these efforts are for naught. And that's what we can't allow. We can't allow citizen and parental involvement to just not be recognized and be acted on. We're not going through this drill just to be going through the drill. That is the bottom line. I really want to say something else, which I will not say. But that bottom line has an adjective in the middle of it, and I'm just telling you right now, we are going to make this happen. That's it, okay? All right, so now that I've spent more time than I wanted to on that, but I think it was worth it, so I'm not going to apologize for it. But I do think that, you know, when we talk about education, it's about the children. We have to understand that. But there's another aspect about this. Ronald Reagan basically said, freedom is at stake every generation. And so what you're seeing now is a deliberate attempt by the radical left and their Democrat allies to undermine the Constitutional Republic. And how are they doing that? The same way the Nazis did it, the same way the commies did it. They control education, and that's how it's going to happen. That's why we can't just sit by and let it happen. This country needs us right now, and we're going to be there, and we're going to make sure that this insidious indoctrination stops. Okay. All right, so let me talk about the Florida hurricane and the response by DeSantis. Why is this important? Well, first of all, you know, you want to have your government doing the right thing and getting there to help people, okay? Having been through Katrina and the disaster that was Katrina, what DeSantis is doing is absolutely the way it should have been done and could have been done. But again, we get back to the fundamental problem. If you don't have good leaders at the top, you're going to have bad results. DeSantis has essentially won his gubernatorial race. There's nothing that they can touch him with on this. You know, it's just like Bush. He was flying over New Orleans, and they just hammered Bush over Katrina. Wrongly, in my view, because it all had to do with the governor who completely screwed up the effort. But nevertheless, Bush got blamed for it. Here's the thing. If DeSantis decides he wants to run for president, and again, I've mentioned to you, Kevin Spriggs has a sign, you know, vote for DeSantis, same policies as Trump, but without the crazy. However you want to feel about that, DeSantis certainly is going to be a player here. So we'll have to see how all that works out. But notice how his competency, his ability to pull everybody together and affect what's going on. I saw the mayor of Pine Island just extolling the virtues of how effective DeSantis was. You know, DeSantis found out that the bridges were down. There's no food, no water. And he got his folks out there as quickly as possible. I mean, this is effective leadership. I mean, you don't stand around and think about it and mull it over and, you know, go through a process or make sure the lawyers and the accountants are all okay with it. We don't want to, you know, get in any kind of... No. Cut through the bureaucratic red tape, kick ass and take names and get the stuff done. There it is. That's what he's done. And I personally think that's exactly what he would do as president, okay? So we'll see how all that works out. But notice how Biden has to go down there and say something about global warming. So it's really interesting. On the road home from Enterprise last night, I was listening to Fox News, and they had all sorts of different things on. And there was an expert on the British guy whose name escapes me, but his show is The Revolution. So at any rate, they're talking about the fact that hurricane numbers have declined, and I've heard this too on other places. So hurricane numbers have declined. Yes, some of them are big and bad, but lives being lost have been significantly lessened. And the interesting thing, too, is that in terms of global aspects of global warming and the negative impact on climate, the same phenomenon has happened. Less deadly storms and, I mean, less storms and less numbers of people who are dead from whatever kind of, you know, storm you're talking about. So I do think that, you know, it's interesting to note that Biden has to go to Florida and talk about climate change. And again, let's kind of transition to Biden. Here we are. Climate change is driving everything he's doing, okay? And as a result of that, what you're seeing is the collapse of the American economy. Now, think about this. And how many times do we have to mention, okay, he's cut off, you know, the pipelines, and they're not, and it's just not the Keystone one, okay? They're doing other pipelines that they're cutting off. They're doing other things to prevent oil from being produced, such as federal land is being excluded from any type of drilling. I mean, the feds own 25% of all the land. So now Fed land is off. It's impossible to see how we get out of all of this economic decline if we don't unleash the energy that we have available, which is what Trump did. But aside from Trump doing it, okay, the religious aspect of climate change is driving these people to shut down fossil fuels. Okay, so no drilling on federal land. How about this? Did you happen to see Jamie Dimon? He's a big banker in New York. He was on at a congressional hearing, and he was asked by one of the idiot climate people about, you know, not giving financing to oil companies. And he said, that would be a decision that would just ruin this country. Words to that effect. I mean, just think about that. But think about this. There are these woke banks that are applying ESG, okay, the economic, social, and governmental, you know, formula that the Chinese communists use to determine whether or not you're going to get a bank loan. And if you're an oil company, well, we want to shut that down. So, I mean, how is it that we're shutting this down through private loans from the banks to businesses? How is it that when we do all of that, you have problems in producing food because fertilizer is short? And guess what? What are we going to do about inflation in terms of food production and bringing that food to the market? Well, I mean, your truck drivers are, you know, running diesel, and that diesel is costing a hell of a lot more. So you don't think that's passed off to you as you pay for your eggs and all the rest of it? So, I mean, it's really an interesting... how do I want to say this? It's an interesting approach to how this whole idea that Clower and Piven had in the early 60s, just bring the system to chaos, it can't control it, and it falls apart. That's exactly what you're seeing on the border. It's out of control. We all know that. 2 million have come across. Another 500,000 or more are getaways. The system is broken. The food system is being broken by these attacks on production centers. Okay? Now, you may think, well, Dr. Lunatic is really kind of out there today. Well, maybe it is Dr. Lunatic. But how do you have 3 or 4 airplanes suddenly fly into production centers? I mean, one would be an outlier of the first magnitude. It just doesn't happen. But 4? How is it that fires and other things are happening in other production centers, food production centers. I don't know. I don't think it's such a conspiracy theory anymore. But I will say this. Let's just hope that Biden and the Democrats pay the heaviest price that can be imaginable in November. 29 days away, folks. Now, we don't have to worry about this in Alabama. I get that. But I'll tell you what. If we can go to Georgia, I know that the Republican Party has had taken, you know, strike forces over into Florida and to Georgia. If you can go help out there, I think you should. And wave signs, do whatever you can do. Send some money if you can do it. So, once again, this whole question of Biden and what he does and what he's doing to destroy this country, it doesn't make sense unless you have this fervor of hatred for the United States, which they do. And I've talked enough about this that I just don't think I have to prove it any further. It's there. And they want to fundamentally change America, just as exactly what Obama wanted to do. All right, let's talk about our buddy Putin and Biden, okay? So, Uncle Joe is at a fundraiser the other night.
What did he do now?
Well, that's a good question, okay? I will give you the Campo interpretation here, okay?
Okay.
So he's out there schmoozing with all of his donors, and he comes up with this idea that this is the most serious time we've had about the possibility of nuclear Armageddon since the Kennedy Cuban Missile Crisis. Now, Lori and I are sitting here doing this every Monday. I don't feel like we have a nuclear Armageddon along the lines of 1962. I have said to you all, though, that I think that Putin has threatened to use nuclear weapons. So kind of keep that as point one to think about. Point two, he just annexed portions of Ukraine. Now remember, he took Crimea in 2014. And I'll come back to that in a second. So his annexation plan essentially now is the eastern territories that he's occupied, even though they're losing in Kherson and those areas there. So, but nevertheless, this is the critical part. He has annexed it through this phony referendum, which I think we talked about last week. It's Russian territory now. Now, today at the UN, they're supposed to have a meeting of the Security Council. Big whoop. What do you think those idiots are going to do? Nothing. They will not do it. Anything they do will be vetoed by the Ruskies. All right? So their hands are tied. All right? So the issue here then becomes, is Russian territory, even though it's annexed, I would argue, illegally, and if the Security Council even discusses it, I'm sure they would come to the same conclusion, okay? So, it's Russian territory now, folks. We have an oops moment here. Because, technically, if it's Ruski territory, Putin has the right to defend Russian territory with any means possible. Oops, oops, oops. All right, he's already threatened to use nukes. So, what's the next step? Well, this was a discussion on Saturday on Journal Editorial Report, and General Keane pretty much said he doesn't think he's going to do it. I don't think that General Keane is right about that. Okay, so let's just assume for a second that he's not bluffing, as he personally said. And he uses one. Well, I had this discussion with you all last week. What is the U.S. response going to be? Okay, so hold that thought for a second. What has taken place over the weekend and parts of last week? Pro-Russian hackers went into the O'Hare airport system, shut it down. they are threatening to shut down Atlanta, D.C., and other places like that. Now, think also of the North Stream pipeline that was blown up. Now, we don't know who blew it up. Okay? Argument is, and again, it's kind of interesting, Biden talked about doing that back in March or February. He talked about it in serious terms, like if we want to do that, we have the capability to do it. Now, Lori, does that suggest to you that it was in Biden's mind to use that as a means to punish Putin for doing the Ukraine attack?
Could be.
Okay. All right, but let's look at the other side. Why would the Ruskies want to destroy their own pipeline? Well, for one thing, it's good disinformation to say, see, the Americans are doing this. It gives them a reason to go after us in other ways.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, in practical terms, it does shut off all sorts of resources that are necessary for Western Europe, so it gives them, you know, a price to pay. They're not getting it. And here again, going back to Soviet doctrine about resource denial, okay? So the pipeline being out does hurt the Russians in terms of money coming in. But guess what? They've got money coming in from different places. They're selling to the Chinese and all like that. My argument here is that it doesn't hurt the Russians to have blown this thing up, okay?
In order to blame the U.S.
and blame
and
the U.S. It okay. also doesn't mean that Biden, being the dumbass that he is, didn't do it because he had this idea that he floated around and blah, blah, blah. So we'll see what the evidence looks like one way or another. But the point is, this whole business of what you're seeing with the hackers, that's part and parcel of a Russian response to what the West is doing, and the Americans particularly. All right, so let's go back to the possibility of a nuke. General Keane basically said that a tactical nuke probably wouldn't be that useful for the Ruskies because, you know, the Ukrainian army, you know, is just too spread out and all like that. I don't know if that's necessarily the reason why Putin would necessarily use it, okay? He could use a tactical nuke into a couple of places that make sense militarily, stockpiling bases, you know, logistical areas, things like that, not necessarily for troop formations. So if he did that, then he would gain some credibility. He would also help his own people by eliminating the kinds of weapon stockpiles that have been hurting them, okay? So, in my view, a tactical nuke is not necessarily off the table right now, especially from a political standpoint that he's annexed these areas and they are Russian territory. Whether or not we agree with that or not, and whether UN says anything about it, doesn't matter, okay? So the real question then is, what do we do? Now, some people have been talking about, you know, we're going full bore. I mean, people have talked about, you know, getting F-16s over there, possibly using our own troops. I think that is absolutely the wrong way to go with this, because for one thing, let's just step back a second. What are our goals with supporting the Ukrainians? Goal number one is to keep Ukraine under the control of the Ukrainian government, okay? To help them fend off an attack. To send a message to Putin that you're not going to get away with this without paying a price. So there's sanctions and all the military gear that we're sending and all like that. It's a very limited objective, okay? Now, if for some reason he pops a nuke, does that change our objectives? I don't think it does. I think what it does is it creates a sense of urgency for us to give the Ukrainians more of what's necessary. Now, this is what I said yesterday. We need to be supplying them, particularly with anti-missile capability. I mean, the Iron Dome, as I've been saying this for months now, the Iron Dome needs to be given to the Ukrainians. I mean, that's the best way to protect them from incoming missiles. So, as it stands right now, you know, if the Russians are going to do what they're doing in response to the Crimean bridge that was built blown up, which is to, you know, send ballistic, you know, cruise missiles and other things into civilian targeted areas, then it seems to me we have a moral responsibility to do more along those lines to support the Ukrainians. It seems to me that we need to do more on the conventional side so that the Ukrainians can take back the territories. Okay? I don't think that it's in our interest to get to the point where this is a 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis situation. And I think that can be avoided. It's just like I suggested to you all months ago, that it made no sense for people to be beating the drums about sending U.S. ships into the Black Sea to escort food ships out of Ukraine. That was just going to be a rerun of what happened with the Iran-Iraq war. One of our ships, you know, got hit with an Exocet missile, and, you know, sailors were killed. If that happens in this situation where we're now eyeball to eyeball with the Ruskies in the Black Sea, that would immediately go into, you know, an escalation of a situation that which we've kind of agreed this is a limited objective. We don't need to be doing anything that's going to create a war situation between us and the Ruskies. And it's not that I'm afraid of the Ruskies. That's not the issue. I don't want to be stupid about this. And because you've got a stupid ass who's running the country, we could very well find ourselves doing a stupid thing. Okay? So maybe we ought to better start writing to Biden and tell him to take his foot off the pedal of Armageddon. You know, that is BS. And I think that that's one thing. I'm going to get an alert out to the Common Sense Campaign and to the Alabama Conservative Coalition. Let's start writing to him and saying, back the you-know-what off.
As a
cool the rhetoric. As what?
As a political science professor, I dare say you probably know more about the history than he does.
Well, let's put it this way. Whether I do or not,
you do.
Other people have said he has made stupid mistakes, never been on the right side of any foreign policy issue. So I take that as sufficient grounds for me to say he's a dumbass, okay? And we need to stop it. So I do think that this test that we're going to see with these hackers and what else Putin is going to do to try to pay back the Americans, whether it's, you know, going after satellites, things like that, or undersea cables that we have to rely on. We'll see how this goes out. And, of course, I just noticed it is now almost 11 o'clock. So here's another thing we do know. This show is coming to an end. All right, Lori.
Time for the wrap-up.
It is time to wrap up. Well, I haven't covered everything that I wanted to cover, but there's always next Monday. So I will be back, God willing, that we don't, you know, find ourselves in heaven by then. But we'll see. Lori, thank you. Appreciate the fact that we're able to do this. And I think that hopefully that, you know, people will take notice of what's going on with this stuff. And we will try to put some it may be a fruitless approach to write him a letter, but I think Biden needs to hear from the grassroots people. Okay? Lori, have a great week. You folks out there, have a great week. See you next week.
Thank
take
you.
Care. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. Thank you for your public service. Just so you know that Dr. Lou serves no financial gain whatsoever in doing this program. It's simply a public service from his heart and his
concern.
Well,
thank you very much for saying that. That's true.
The show is sponsored, however, the airtime paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181, and an anonymous donor. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. What?
Can I say something?
Sure.
I'm not unwilling to take some money if somebody wants to give me money for this, but I love public service, but you know, whatever.
I got it. Thank you. All right, thank you. This is WABF, Mobile, Fairhope, great music and memories. If you missed part of the show or you want to tell a friend so you can listen to it later, it will be posted momentarily for you to listen to it anytime on our website, WABF1480.com.